afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and all major podcast providers. You can also visit our website at www.theorganicview.com, where you can subscribe to our newsletter to find out about upcoming guests, features, events, and other shows on our network. If you have any questions or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please visit us on Facebook, Twitter, or send us an email to questions@theorganicview.com. In this special series called The Neonicotinoid View, my co-host Tom Theobald and I will be joined by Walter Hofiger, who is the president of the European Professional Beekeepers Association, to discuss the recent proposed ban on neonicotinoids. There's been a global plea by beekeepers and environmentalists alike to ban the use of systemic pesticides called neonicotinoids. The EPA defines neonicotinoids as a class of insecticides with a common mode of action that affects the central nervous system of insects, causing paralysis and death. All of the neonicotinoids were registered after 1984 and were not subject to re-registration. Some uncertainties have been identified since their initial registration regarding the potential environmental fate and effects of neonicotinoid pesticides, particularly as they relate to pollinators. Recently, there has been a lot of discussion in Europe debating whether or not there's enough distinct evidence to prove that these agricultural chemicals should in fact be banned. The European Commission is seeking a limit on the use of these chemicals for a 2-year period. The agrochemical companies, which produce the neonicotinoids, feel it is unfair and not justifiable. The European Food Safety Authority, which identified risks to bees, was the basis for the ban. So I would first like to welcome to the show my co-host, Tom Theobald.
Hello, June. Tom. Hi, June.
And our guest today, Mr. Walter Hofiger, joining us live today from Germany. Good afternoon or good evening, Walter.
Yeah, I'm really glad to be on your show again.
And we always look forward to speaking to you, Walter. Walter, can you tell our audience about yourself?
Well, I'm a beekeeper in Germany in beautiful Bavaria. I'm volunteering my time on the board of the German Professional Beekeepers Association, and I'm the president of the European Professional Beekeepers Association, and have been working on the beekeeper's perspective on agriculture, the use of pesticides and GMOs for many years.
Thank you. Walter, can you explain to our audience, especially for people that are not necessarily clear as far as what neonicotinoids are, can you explain what they're used for and how they affect bees?
Well, neonicotinoids are a relatively new generation of insecticides that are widely used on here in Europe on about 50 different crops. They are highly toxic to bees. French research has shown that they are about 7,000 times more toxic to bees than DDT. And these products are frequently used as a seed treatment, so they're not sprayed in many cases, but the seed of the crops is being coated so that the plant takes up the insecticide and becomes toxic to pests, but unfortunately also to bees throughout. The effect on bees is not just acute toxicity, but these insecticides are neurotoxic, and they have all kinds of sublethal effects, meaning they have detrimental effects on the bees' behavior, their ability to orient themselves, their ability to communicate with each other in the hive. And this leads to all kinds of problems for the honeybees because they are a superorganism that relies heavily on very intelligent behavior.
Thank you, Walter. Could you also share with our audience the countries that have so far banned their use?
Well, the most frequently cited countries here in Europe are Germany, Italy, and Slovenia. In these places, you have partial bans in place on particular applications. So there is no overall ban on the active ingredient, but only bans on certain uses of them on certain crops.
Thank you. Tom, can you explain what the situation is in the U.S. in regards to the restriction of neonicotinoids, if any?
Well, there are no restrictions here in the United States, and in the last growing season, there were 240 million acres of primarily commodity crops that were planted to treated seed, and an unknown acreage in urban and suburban environments, and there are no restrictions on it. And the charge has been made that one of the greatest offenders, clothianidin, has never met the qualifications for legal registration, and yet we've been suffering the consequences for, well, over 10 years now. And it doesn't appear, I'd like to hear from Walter just exactly what's going on in Europe, because one of their regulatory or one of their agencies has made some pretty dramatic recommendations in the last 2 weeks, and we're watching here in the United States. And then I'd like to comment, once he's done that, I'd like to comment a little bit on what is happening here with our regulatory agency, the EPA. So,
I'm more than happy to do that. One correction, there's an additional country that I shouldn't have forgotten in this list, and that is France. There are also partial bans on certain products there. And actually the French government, especially after the election, has become a lot more proactive on this issue. Now, the regulatory situation and the different bodies involved is pretty complicated in Europe, because you have both an approval process of the active ingredients at the European level, and then at each member state, additional authorities that can approve or deny the use of particular products based on these active ingredients. What happened 2 weeks ago is that the European Food Safety Authority put out a press release and three reports on three particular active ingredients. Well, how do you pronounce this?
Clothianidin.
Imidacloprid and thiamethoxam. And so those are not all of the active ingredients in the neonicotinoid group, but the ones they have the highest concern about. Now, the European Food Safety Authority is in charge of risk assessment of these products. And based on their recommendations, the other bodies in the EU can take action. So after this report came out, there was a lot of pressure on the European Commission to make a proposal to do an actual ban. And there was an initiative by one of the member states, that is the Netherlands, get the other member states to ask the Commission to institute such a ban. This initiative has received a lot of support from the other member states, but Spain, England, Denmark, and Hungary have said, wait a minute, this is all happening too fast, and they're trying to slow down the process. Also, the European Parliament has a voice in this process and has also looked at a ban. There have also been petition drives by European citizens asking for a ban.
There's a huge petition going on that you're actually a part of, Walter. Could you share that with our audience and how they can get involved?
Yeah, actually, we have in Europe, depending on what level you're looking at, whether you're looking at the European level or the member state level, several online petition drive platforms. There's change.org. They have a petition running in at least three member states that have collected several hundred thousand signatures for a ban. Then there's a platform called Avaaz that has collected over 2 million signatures from European citizens. Both of these petitions have been delivered while the European bodies were deliberating this issue in Brussels. We also have a campaign called Camp Act in Germany, and we will be delivering over 200,000 signatures to the German government next Wednesday. So there is huge groundswell of public support for a ban, but the proposals that are actually being discussed are not an outright ban of the overall group of neonicotinoids. It's also not, what's also not being discussed is a ban of the three ingredients, active ingredients, that the EFSA report is all about. And that leaves us at a discussion of a two-year ban of some applications of these neonicotinoids on certain crops throughout Europe. And because a full ban would be relatively simple, and a ban by crop is very complicated, there is the opportunity for the lobbying groups on the other side to push this off into some expert panel that studies the issue, which crops should be the ban should cover for a long time. And I think there's a strategy going on to try to let this public storm pass. It is right now not clear to what extent a ban will actually cover a lot of the crops that we're concerned about.
There's been an interesting development here, Walter, that I just learned about yesterday.
Yep.
And I know that it relates to some of your experience with the chemical industry. Apparently, the two major beekeeping organizations in the United States, the American Honey Producers Association and the American Beekeeping Federation, have been approached by the chemical industry and encouraged to join in a joint effort to study risk mitigation. And it's kind of a hurry, sort of a situation. And my advice to them, at least, has been that we have to stop being enablers. And it's to the industry's, chemical industry's great advantage to prolong this as long as they can. And I know that you've had some experience with efforts at cooperation and were seriously disappointed. Maybe you could just reflect on that very briefly.
Yes, this sounds all too familiar, because what happened here is that when the beekeepers raised the first concerns about neonicotinoids, especially based on the experience in the sunflower crop in France, and because there were some scientists back then that did very important research for us, the industry was concerned that this these ideas about neonicotinoids would spread to Germany, and they offered to fund a research project called the German Bee Monitoring, and they invited public research institutions and the beekeeping associations to be involved in that. I don't want to tell the whole story. If you go on the internet, you'll find an article that I've written about it called Betrayed and Sold Out. And maybe June can link to this on her website.
Sure,
later.
Certainly.
But, you know, it was a sham from the very beginning. Then what we found in Europe recently, it was pretty obvious that the industry had advance warning about the EFSA reports, And they hired a very expensive PR agency in charge of crisis management to, in a hurry, set up a process where they claim they would involve all the stakeholders on all kinds of bee health issues. And so I have the opportunity, they in a very big hurry, put together a special event at one of the most expensive hotels in Berlin during Green Week, which claims to be the largest agricultural and food trade show in the world, and where a meeting of the agricultural ministers of Europe was taking place. And it is quite interesting what they put together there. There is the Catholic University of the Holy Cross in Italy, who apparently has found a way to hire itself out as a scientific facade. They have a lobbying office in Brussels, and they are essentially available for industry to perform scientific theater on a grand scale and sell the sham reports to the decision makers in Brussels. So they put the first event together in Berlin. They're about to do 8 more events in major capitals throughout Europe, all designed to distract the public attention from neonicotinoids.
Walter, if I can just interrupt you for a moment, how big is this industry? How much money do these companies stand to lose if the ban goes through? Because I think that's a very important question to consider.
Well, actually, this is a question that we as beekeepers asked the shareholders of Bayer last year. Bayer Crop Science reported excellent numbers, and we asked the Bayer board to tell the shareholders how much of this financial success depends on the continued marketability of these dangerous pesticides for bees. So because so many crops are being treated with neonicotinoids, this is really the mainstay of the agrochemical industry when it comes to insecticides. This is a billion-dollar industry, you know. And so this is a billion-dollar industry in terms of revenue to these companies. And certainly for farmers who are not trained in working in any other way, this could be, big financial losses.
So the question that's been raised here is, who should stand those losses? Should it be the farmers themselves and the taxpayers? These corporations apparently knew going in what the collateral damage would be, and they've led agriculture into a technology that has failed. I've talked to a number of people who've said that the compensation should come not from the farmers and the taxpayers, but from the ill-gotten profits that these corporations have realized.
I just want to interject something.
Yes.
I think it's quite ironic that this whole thing is even existing, especially since the purpose of a pesticide is to kill a particular pest. And basically what we're talking about is a series of chemicals or a group of chemicals that are doing exactly what they were created to do. And the irony is that the manufacturers are denying that their chemicals are effective. It's just kind of ridiculous.
Well, the termite incident is usually the one that's discussed. It's supposed to have several years effect and disrupt the social unit and many of the things that the beekeeping industry has been concerned about. And yet, when it comes to a discussion of bees, they claim that there's no such effect.
Right. Actually, they're giving us kind of the scientific runaround, because when beekeepers observed problems in the field, the industry said, well, you know, in the field there are so many factors, you can't really figure out what's happening, whether it's the pesticides, whether it's bee diseases, whether it's the varroa mite. You know? And so then scientists went off and said, okay, let's study this carefully in the lab so that you can answer these questions one by one. Now that the lab results are clearly in showing both acute toxic and sublethal effects on the bees, the industry now is saying this is all great, but we don't know whether these lab results translate into anything in the field. So it's absolutely bizarre. And you have to understand the significance of the EFSA paper. EFSA, if you look at their history, has been under constant criticism because EFSA has a track record of being extremely close to industry. Their panels being stacked by with industry people. And so if EFSA is putting out a report that even suggests that there might be a problem, you can assume that they're looking at an elephant, you know?
So, what has caused them this change of, has caused this change of attitude? That's very interesting as you explain what their history was. What, it is a very dramatic declaration that they've made. What has caused them to change their attitude so dramatically?
First of all, they've been basically trying to they basically had the problem that their pronouncements of safety, they've never seen a GMO that they didn't find safe. They have a record of pronouncing bisphenol A, which is very problematic substance found in a lot of plastics, to be safe. And they have a long history of pronouncing anything that the chemical industry puts out as safe. So there's been a lot of public pressure on them to have more independent people on the panel. But I think I don't think they have changed at the core, but the evidence provided by several highly regarded labs from member states has become so overwhelming that it was impossible for EFSA to ignore it. The report is carefully written say, okay, we think there might be a problem here. You know, there's enough language in there to give the other side something to hang their hat on and to slow things down. But by EFSA standards, I don't think I've seen many reports from EFSA that had such a high level of concern expressed. And given their history, that means the real problem is even larger than what EFSA concedes here.
It certainly has become the lead news item around the globe over the past several days. What do you think, where does it go from here in your world? What will be the next steps, and what do you think is likely to be accomplished in the near future? Will there be a ban this growing season, do you think?
Definitely not an overall ban of all of the substances or even the ones listed in the EFSA report. Basically, industry is trying everything to slow the process down, to preserve as much of the approvals as possible for this growing season. So they're trying to slow the decision making down to the middle of the year. I think because they will probably successfully argue that you cannot do an overall ban because the farmers are so dependent on it, and also because the EFSA report doesn't cover all applications, then you're basically down to a decision-making process crop by crop to figure out whether a ban should apply or not. And in this decision-making process, you can chew up a lot of time and also inject a lot of so-called experts that will try to slow-roll the whole thing. So if we do not maintain public pressure, we're definitely not going to see the outcome that we want. Another thing that you should be aware of is that, at least in Germany, we are now working very closely with the water industry.
Excellent.
Because the water, and these are the big energy and water companies here that are usually not exactly on our side. But in terms of the pesticide issue, they have basically given up trying to be heard. Even their lobbyists have given up trying to be heard by the regulators, and they're extremely concerned about what's headed into the water supply and the expenses they will have trying to continue to be able to provide clean drinking water. So that's another factor that we can bring to bear here.
Whether intentional or unintentional, the neonicotinoids are not sampled for in the American water supply.
Walter, can you also talk about the greening of the agricultural sector and how the process is going and how it will actually help the bees?
Well, the current agricultural commissioner, Mr. Chorlov, a few years ago initiated a process because, similar to what you have as a farm bill in the U.S., there is there are huge agricultural subsidies being paid by the European Union to the sector. And Mr. Chorlos correctly stated that it is hard to justify these payments to the European taxpayers if the money is not going towards farmers implementing public goods. So the slogan is public money for public goods. Based on that, Mr. Chorlos made a proposal how to reallocate these subsidies, and these proposals are being discussed under the headline of a greening, meaning that more of the money goes towards paying farmers to promote ecological set-asides, flowering strips, anything, groundwater protection, anything that the public actually benefits from.
It will also help the bees, too.
And, of course, if implemented, this is certainly, right now we have a system where the taxpayers actually funding the kind of agriculture that they overwhelmingly reject. And so by reallocating the funds to pay the farmers more to do things that are in the public interest, this would certainly benefit the bees. Unfortunately, the agro business lobbying efforts have already whittled the original proposals down to close to almost nothing. There was recently the Agricultural Committee in the European Parliament suggested that these agricultural set-asides shouldn't be 10 or 7, but just 3% of the farmland. And also the greening that is being talked about might be literally just greening, meaning not flowers, but setting aside some land to stay as green pasture. And green pasture, the way it is used right now, to especially in the dairy sector, to produce silage as feed for cattle, is not flowering at all. It's just
it's
another.
It's the same over here.
Essentially, the grass is just another crop that is being grown. So what we're saying as beekeepers is, greening is the wrong term. Some of the programs will not benefit biodiversity. And this year is the year where the big decisions are being made. The public has been mobilized to voice their opposition to the whittled-down versions of the proposal. And at Green Week, this big trade show here in Berlin, a few weeks ago, we had 25,000 people, farmers, lots of beekeepers, environmentalists, consumers, protesting and demonstrating for real greening in freezing temperatures, trying to put pressure on the politicians correctly allocate the funds and not maintain the status quo.
Walter, how would you characterize the state of beekeeping in Europe and maybe more particularly in Germany? I'm talking to more and more leading beekeepers in this country who believe that unless we see some very significant changes very quickly, we may be looking at the end. We're out of time, in their view. What's the state of beekeeping in your area?
Well, if you look at last year, the honey crop has been in most of Europe probably the lowest it's been in decades, or in some countries in recorded history. We have many countries where the honey crop was only 25 or 20% of a normal year. This is not just due to farming practices, but also due to weird weather events that some people think might be linked to climate change. So this is a factor that we have to deal with as beekeepers also. The beekeeping sector is fairly resilient because the honeybee is native here. We have lots of beekeepers, from the smallest hobbyists to professional beekeepers that are running, several thousand colonies. So, and there's a lot of support from the public. They like to buy local honey. They are willing to pay a higher price for the honey because they know the pollination is important. So we might be a little bit more resilient in the sector here. We don't have the big operations that are going to, the almond crop in California.
Mm-hmm.
We have migratory beekeeping, but not to the extent this is necessary in the U.S. There's not as much movement of the hives. So I think we might not be as close to the end of the rope here, but
mm-hmm.
if the trends continue, we will probably follow follow into the same trap soon. Also, the farming policies right now are geared towards restructuring of agriculture to be more efficient, larger and larger farms, driving family farmers out of the business. And if we are getting this kind of farming landscape, we might be, end up in the same situation that some parts of the U.S. are already today.
Yes.
Thank you, Walter. Could you briefly tell our audience about a film called More Than Honey, which is having an impact on the public?
Yes, this is a Swiss filmmaker who has won all kinds of awards for a movie that he's been working on for the last 5 years. It is it's a documentary, but it's not just being viewed by beekeepers or people interested in the farming sector, but there are spectacular shots in there about how the honeybee colony functions. And I was at an event yesterday here in a town in Bavaria where we showed the film and had a discussion afterwards, and the movie theater had to turn people away. They, they put in extra chairs in the movie theater, filled it to capacity. They still had to turn people away. This movie is getting a lot of attention. And the filmmaker is following the story of why bees are in trouble throughout the world. So he's looking at very traditional beekeeping in Switzerland. He's looking at highly large-scale beekeeping in the United States. He's looking at parts of China where there are no bees anymore, and they're pollinating with migrant workers. It's quite an interesting film that helps raise the public awareness. And so people are, on the one hand, reading in the press about these EFSA reports. They're looking at these this movie that shows the relationship between farming practices and the mirror image in beekeeping practices. And the end result is that their level of concern and their engagement with the beekeeping issue is really high right now. And this film is currently being launched all over Europe. I think it's played at several film festivals in the U.S. already. So I'm not sure whether it's coming to the theaters in the U.S., but it should.
I'll see if I can find it over here.
If you Google More Than Honey or you go on YouTube, you can see the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'll put a link on theorganicview.com.
Right. And I think because I know the filmmaker, I helped a little bit with the research on the film, and also there's a book that goes along with it. If some key people in the beekeeping community would like to have early access to the film, they have a platform that watermarks the film so that if you can see it on the computer, it cannot turn into a bootleg copy.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can take a look at it and see how it helps the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Walter, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask you about your annual membership meeting of the European Professional Beekeepers Association, which was recently held in Madrid, Spain, as opposed to having it in Brussels. Can you explain why you had it in Madrid?
I'm more than happy to do that. We were actually invited by the Spanish beekeepers, who are organized not in a standalone beekeeping organization, but they are part of one of the biggest Spanish farmers' union. Maybe because the beekeepers are part of this farmers union and there's a lot of dialogue between farmers and beekeepers in there, farmers and beekeepers are united against the planting of genetically modified crops, and they are united in their view on neonicotinoids. So Spain is the country that has pretty much the only country in Europe that has large-scale cultivation of GM crops, because of the same government that decided to join the U.S. in the Iraq War also decided to open the floodgates to the GMO industry. So beekeepers and farmers are trying to fight back, and we as beekeepers won a court case around labeling of honey at the European Court of Justice, and the beekeepers in Spain are most affected by this decision. So yeah. It was important for us to be there with them
and show solidarity, yeah,
and show solidarity and coordinate our next step. But also the Spanish government is trying to introduce GMO cotton, which will be a problem for beekeepers because of the contamination of the honey. But also this cotton is treated with neonicotinoids. So again, farmers and beekeepers are united in rejecting GMO cotton in this country, and we certainly wanted to support that stance.
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on the show. Can you share with our audience your website for your organization?
Well, it's www.professional-beekeepers.eu.
Thank you so much. And Tom, thank you also for joining us today.
Yes, and thank you, Walter. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
My pleasure.
Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great week, folks.
Thanks, June.
Thank you.